Blog Talk Radio.
Recording, right? Okay, welcome to AgriTalk. And this is a show where we talk about all things agricultural. And today we have a guest that can talk about all things agricultural.
A lot, yeah. From anything from cattle to vegetables.
Okay. Also, he is from the Extension office. Could you define Extension, what that does?
Extension is a variety of things, a wide variety of things
okay.
now, but it's everything from helping the community to different ag products to clear into food nutrition and everything else. So it used to be a little narrower, but now I think it encompasses so much more. So,
mm-hmm.
but yep. That's
and it. East County has an extension agent or not?
Yes, some have multiples. Some have only one. It varies. They can have an ag agent. They could have 4-H. Most every county has 4-H for sure. Some may have more, may have two 4-H agents or maybe a 4-H agent and a helper if or something
mm-hmm.
to that effect. But, yeah.
And do all, we're in Ohio, so
mm-hmm.
does Ohio have, does every other state have an extension?
Yeah, they do in some form or another. Now, they all may not look exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Some are really limited, I'll call it, in resources. Some are very plentiful. I would call Ohio probably one of the plentiful states. But in the most part, yeah, there are some states that's very thin, I think,
mm-hmm.
In that, meaning they may only have an ag person that covers half a state or
yeah.
something, you know, depending on the state and what
yeah.
resources they have and things.
Rhode
like
Island versus Texas.
Yeah, yeah. There may be only one person that covers the entire state. Who knows?
Right. Okay. Well, we have an extension educator here.
Yes. We have Jeff Moore from Gallia County Extension. And, Jeff, welcome to the show. And what we'd like to do is first give you a little bit of time to tell us about yourself, how long you've been with the OSU Extension, and a little bit about your background prior to coming to the Extension office.
Okay. Like I said, I'm Jeff Moore. I am the ag educator for Gallia County, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I like my job. I like being able to work with the farmers and help them start new projects or to continue something they've been doing to give sustainability to some of those family farmers and those operations.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to coming to Extension with Ohio State, I actually finished my master's in ruminant nutrition from the University of Arkansas and then came back home to the family farm that happens to be in Gallia County, predominantly a beef cow-calf operation,
mm-hmm.
Also some forages and some tobacco and some other things like that, but also worked with a local packing plant where we tried to not only process the animals, but help promote marketing of those products from the producers to the individual consumers.
And how long have you been with the Extension office now?
This November will be 4 years for me with Extension.
4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And being that local processing plant,
mm-hmm.
I guess there's a whole movement towards being local, and that not only covers vegetables and plant-based things, but it also does like beef cattle or whatever type of animal products, right?
Yeah. The demand for local products, whether it be produce, whether it be meats, whether it be dairy products, even in the eggs and things like that, has grown significantly in the last several years.
Right. One of the things that I think consumers think is, I know where it came from. It wasn't from, you know, some scary factory farm in some far-off state. You know, I know it was from this guy's farm down the road, and I know how he keeps his cattle.
Knowing the farmer, having that relationship with the farmer is big for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, knowing it's not from a factory farm, but it is from their neighbor, basically, somebody
mm-hmm.
who they might go to church with or they might see every day on the street, just your normal person.
Are there other benefits from buying local?
The benefits from buying local, I mean, you could go on forever.
Yeah. big topic, isn't it?
It is a very big topic.
I know there's a financial part. You put the money back into your own ecosystem as far as the money goes, but as far as consuming products that were grown in your local area.
Well, you mentioned the financial aspects of it. If we're supporting that local farmer, we're not only helping support them and their family, we're supporting the businesses they shop at, we're supporting our local community, and that those tax dollars are staying right here in our area. The benefits of being able to have fresh produce. You know, if you're looking at some of the local producers, you can actually find whatever you're looking for, whether that be some of the organic stuff, if you want stuff that hasn't been pesticides or anything used on it. Those options are more available, and you can actually talk to the producer and find out what they're doing. So.
Right. Now, I know we bought our Thanksgiving turkey from a local guy. It cost a little bit more, but, you know, I know it was raised like a mile from where I live.
How big in Gallia County is local produce now? Is it, I mean, is it, do we have a big produce market, auctions? What are some of the things that we have in our options in Gallia County?
Okay, for Gallia County specifically, the local produce and the local goods have really taken off in the last several years, whether that be through starting the Gallia County Farmers Market, which is a place where people can go find vendors with the different meats, cheeses, produce, anything like that, any agricultural or food products, to having the Ohio Valley Produce Auction open here in Gallia County. I believe this is our fifth year in operation. So, I mean, there's a lot of produce like that. We have a lot of farmers who are marketing things from their homes. Some of them using the cottage food industry laws and regulations and laws to be able to do that. So the demand is definitely being met in Gallia County. We kind of like to continue to grow that, develop the market more, and also help the producers that way too.
Now, the auction, who buys from that? Would that be the local grocery stores? Would I find local, tomatoes in my grocery store around me, or where is that going?
Well, as far as the produce auction goes, they've kind of been set up more to work towards providing your grocery stores, providing your restaurants, your businesses with large amounts of things. They do have small lots, is what they're calling them, where if me as a home, if I want to can my own tomatoes or something at home, I can still go to buy small lots of that instead of buying the whole pallet or the whole crate.
Okay,
that's a good idea.
So they still have that. But predominantly, they are working more for the restaurants, the grocery stores, the larger volume purchasers. If somebody's just wanting some things, you know, to feed their families, working with the farmers market might be a better option for them.
Mm-hmm. And there's a farmers market in each county, probably. I don't think it's regulated to that, but...
No, farmers markets, there is no regulation on how many you can have in a county. Or even in a town, for that matter. I believe most of our surrounding counties have at least one farmer's market. I know Gallia County has one. But it's been a good service for the community and for the producer as well.
Mm-hmm. And you can find more than just tomatoes and beans there. They've got fudge and cakes, pies, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, the baked goods have always been really popular at farmer's markets. And it's a way that farmers can make money, but also it adds some other products that will draw customers in as well. So, and like you said, the fudges and caramels and stuff like that tend to be pretty good. I know I spend quite a bit of money on them every week. So.
Good topics. Mm-hmm. What else does, what about into the cattle market, or not necessarily market, but education-wise? What do you offer as far as that?
As far as education through the cattle type thing. Each year, OSU offers a beef school. It's helped put on by our state beef specialist, John Grimes, and he covers topics, or has the other people cover topics that involve genetics, management, marketing, all the helpful things like that. Each individual county a lot of times will do different forage and grazing programs, trying to educate people on how to do that, how to manage their resources on their farm, whether it be through setting up watering facilities, how to manage your forage to get the most use out of it, storing forages, all kinds of things like that. So,
what do you see that most people need? What's one of the biggest problems that you can help with or have helped with? Is there a common problem through the area that, you know, whether it's marketing or the water or food sources?
Well, with the largest problem, I think that would depend on the individual client that's coming in or making the phone call. You know, that's one of the things I like to do is when they call in, just get some background information on them, find out what they're trying to do, what's holding them back, what's limiting their ability to do that, and work with them from there. You know, some of them it may be finding financing to put up a barn, to put up fencing, different types of things like that. While OSU Extension doesn't offer any grants or any type of monetary program, trying to know, keep an idea of what is out there so we can refer them to those other agencies, whether it be NRCS or Farm Service Agency or just a different group that can help them that way. If it comes to just an education program they need, either finding that for them or figuring out a way to offer that to them or work with them on a one-on-one basis. So, I mean, the problems each person has are very different, but trying to help them find that solution is part of the job that I enjoy.
Yeah. Do you see people going into maybe some new and emerging fields? I know there's like hydroponics and raising fish and, you know, like a fish farm or different things.
Well, agriculture in general, I mean, it's always changing. Nothing ever stays the same. And, you know, like you said, some of the hydroponic programs where they're raising the fish and different things.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's something they work with quite a bit in Piketon. So there's a lot of research and field days and stuff going on with that. I haven't seen anybody locally doing that. Some of the other hydroponic programs where they're raising the different vegetables and stuff, that's something that some people have tried and are continuing to work with. So, I mean, there's always something new going on, and it's kind of exciting seeing what people are going to do. And farmers in general they've always kind of been seen as traditional, stuck-in-the-mud type people.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get to talking to them, you'll realize that a lot of them are very up-to-date. They know what's going on. They want to try those new things, and they're very willing to in a lot of situations.
Now, that somewhat goes into maybe the next thing is as far as trying new things and better yield is GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'd like to talk a little about what is a GMO?
That's a big question. a GMO, by definition, is anything that we have changed the genetic makeup of. So whether that be through crossing two varieties or scientifically going in and adding genes from one thing to another.
Why would a company do that?
The primary reason that GMOs have been developed are to increase yield, to reduce disease problems, and to produce a product that better fits our need.
So it's not like there's a chemical within that would be harmful.
No, I think a lot of the misconception is that when people think of GMOs, they are thinking about those, what they call frankenfoods, that genes have been altered or added to completely change something. But when actually you look at it, GMOs are simply something we have worked to develop that, you know, some of the things that we had, the Roundup Ready crops.
Mm-hmm.
All that's been done is it has been genetically selected for plants that can survive Roundup. And by doing that, we have been able to use less herbicides in our crops. You know, we can go ahead and spray the fields around that planter crop, maybe do one more application, and have it to where we're not having to go and multiply spray these, to where we can cut back on the pesticides or herbicides we're using. And also it saves on labor for the farmer because he's not having to do all the cultivation and tillage, which can in turn be passed on to the consumer by reducing the amount or the cost they're having to pay for the food.
Mm-hmm.
So, and allows that farmer to produce more in a system where
if there's less waste or damage from different things. Yeah, I thought, you know, well, you're crossing different things. It would be like a Labradoodle, you know. And the reason that people like Labradoodles is because they don't shed as much. And so there's a benefit to having that cross, but it's not like a Frankenstein dog.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to hurt you. And, well, I can't remember what the next thing I was going to say was. But.
Well, the GMOs in general, they have enabled us, like I said, to use less herbicides, less pesticides. We've created plants that don't have as many disease problems. We don't have to use as many fungicides. We don't have to use as many pesticides. They're taking care of that, so we can use less of them. And one of the big things with OSU is every year we do the pesticide applicator certification. And every year, farmers using pesticides have to come in and get certified by the ODA. OSU will do that training for them.
Because you just can't spray a field just because you want to.
Yeah. We educate these people and try to encourage them and train them how to properly use these pesticides and herbicides to where they're getting the benefit from them but not creating environmental problems.
Like killing bees and different things like that.
If you're looking at the bees, you know, we try to educate them on when to use the pesticides. You know, we're not going to spray whenever the crop's in full bloom, when the bees are going to be there. Also, if we're looking at the bees, you know, spraying at certain times of the day would be a bit more beneficial or cause less problems. So, and also looking at the types of herbicides and pesticides we're using, trying to figure it out that way.
Mm-hmm. And another thing on the GMO thing, if you knew that, you know, like stomach cancer runs very strong in your family or any other type of cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you not maybe try and change that DNA a little bit to subtract or add something so you were not susceptible to that? And would that be, like, you know, against your, you know, can't think of the word. Anyway. That's sort of like what you're saying as far as disease tolerant and stuff. And that may be coming down the line.
I guess I would kind of look at it more of instead of going in and changing genes and changing the makeup of a human being or of ourselves, I would look at it more as maybe a vaccination program. You know, if we can go in and introduce the antibodies or something that's going to create the antibodies in our body to prevent that, then it's definitely worth doing. While we're not changing the genetic makeup of that person, just adding something to it that's going to allow their body, what they already have, to function better.
To help defend
it that way.
Kind of like the flu shot or something.
Yeah, like the flu shot.
Yeah.
It's always possible.
I was trying to, like, relate it to some other things people are familiar with.
Yeah.
So it's not such a scary thing people
are afraid of.
It's a very useful program that they can use. And like I said, in general, it does help reduce the labor, reduce costs, make food cheaper, and also makes it healthier for us that way.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that, obviously, we're trying to produce more food with less land, it seems like. And with the population growing so much, we've got to figure out a way to produce more with less. Do we see the local area, Gallia County or surrounding, do you see the land going away like what we're hearing? And or
I mean as far as development and what
development
or agriculture?
Or just farmers going away as far as maybe they're retiring and their younger ones not picking it up? Or do you see that in this area?
I guess we'll start out a little bit with development and that type of thing. You know, anytime we're taking land out of agricultural use, whether we're putting houses on it, putting roads on it, we're decreasing the amount of food we can possibly produce. While we realize people have to have houses to live in, places to stay, and that type of thing. So, I mean, that's something we've got to work with. And farmers being able to adapt and produce more food on less land is something that we're working on, as well as the farmers themselves. As far as do I see farmers going away as far as retiring? Farming's challenging. If you look at
if you're looking for an easy job, that's not
the one to get into, that's for sure.
But it is rewarding. It does have its payoff.
It's a very rewarding job. You can look at look at what you've done and see the effects fairly quickly. But if you look at the age of the average farmer, that age continues to rise and rise.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of at a phase right now that a lot of those older farmers are looking to retire, if a farmer ever actually retires.
If they ever retire.
Yeah.
It's not a very common thing for a farmer to talk about, but we are at that age that a lot of them are starting to slow down. But at the same time, it's kind of encouraging because you see a whole new generation of farmers, younger people, getting involved. And with them, they kind of bring some new experiences, some new outlooks, some new goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's an exciting time. It's kind of a changing time
mm-hmm.
for agriculture.
Yeah, I think some of those new technologies like the hydroponics and different things will be very well suited for this area because this is a hilly, kind of rocky region where it's not flat fields that are easy to cultivate,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you might have to look at something a little different
mm-hmm.
to make the best of what you have.
Yeah, well, talking about the hydroponics and everything, that could be an option for us. Whenever you get into the home gardeners and things like that, doing things like raised beds and things could definitely
mm-hmm.
help them a lot that way too. You know, southeastern Ohio has typically always been a cattle area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these hillsides we have, we really shouldn't be going out and tilling them up, putting crops on them, but they make great forage for livestock.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, have your livestock on the hill and raise your crops in the bottom or put them in the greenhouse and hydroponics.
Right.
You're going to do that way. So.
Mm-hmm.
What other things can you help a person with other than farming
mm-hmm.
in this area?
Well, as an ag educator, we kind of get asked to do quite a few things. Farming is, and agriculture is primarily what we focus on. But for the homeowner, we also provide things like what can we use to control this pest? How can we discourage snakes from staying around the house? You know, different types of things about how should we put in our access road to get into our house? Conservation practices.
Mm-hmm.
Hunters a lot of times will be looking to us to see how to put out their food plots or how to manage a woodland to where it can be used best that way. I mean, there's a lot of programs out there. We also a lot of times get to work with the youth in the county. I know I work with the Gallia County Junior Fair, with the livestock portion of the, and the crops portion of the fair, and just a lot of different opportunities. That if people have a question, give us a call, and we can help you however we can.
So if you got a bad patch in your yard, you could test the soil and see what it needs.
Yep. Most offices in the state will offer soil testing. Normally, we have to send those samples off. We can normally have them back to you within a week or so.
And you charge for that?
We do have to charge for that. Normally, it's only the cost of the test and the cost of shipping to get it done. So it's one of the things we do offer, and we'll help you figure out what to do with those results when you get it back to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm. How about if you've got some bushes or trees or different things that's not growing correctly or possibly diseased? I had an ash tree with little beetles in it that
mm-hmm.
it didn't survive very well.
With the emerald ash borer?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of look at my job as a problem solver. You know, somebody comes in or calls in and they say, hey, this is wrong with my bush, or it's not doing this, it's not growing like it's supposed to. Well, then, I mean, there's a whole list of things you can go down through on management, on diseases and things, looking for that problem, helping them figure out what it is and how to treat it. So,
could you do something about the ticks?
Well,
they seem to be a little aggressive this year. They do.
Yeah, I don't think it was cold enough to kill off any, if that even happens.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I actually got several calls on in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for homeowners, if it could be as simple as, you know, keeping your yard mowed close,
mm-hmm.
doing away with tall vegetation, moving things like kids' swing sets out into the sun instead of under the shade tree.
Do they stay in the shade?
If you can stay out in the sun, you're going to have less ticks.
Okay.
So keeping them.
So my hikes in the woods are not the best.
Not the best.
I know. I haven't been in the woods for a year because of the ticks. I would come out of the woods and I would pick off probably 20, 25 ticks. It's crazy.
Okay. And apply a good insecticide preventer, and then go have fun. I mean, I wouldn't avoid the woods just because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Afraid of getting.
But then when these buggers bite you, they leave a well.
Some of these are pretty dangerous.
They can give you diseases. Mm-hmm. And I've heard dogs they'll get a disease that it could be life-threatening.
Yeah. And that's one of the things to pets is making sure we manage their homes and their houses to where we can kind of prevent the ticks from having a place to stay there. So some of our farm dogs, it's a little bit harder to keep something on, but they're our products.
You're right. With all of this information, obviously they can call you, but do you have information on your website, or do you direct people to different sites or anything like that might be useful?
Yeah. Look on your county's extension website. Just Google it, whatever your county is, an extension office, and it'll come up. Normally there's an ag section on there that'll have articles, links to different things, programs coming up and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody comes in and they have a problem, we can refer them to places like South Centers, where some of the state specialists and things are, or we have the whole university at our disposal to help out with. So Ohio Line is a good program or a good website people can go to and look at articles, go in there and search for your ticks and how to control them.
Yeah.
There's probably a fact sheet on there about that. So
Maybe what you could wear if possibly there's an oil or something that they don't like, or a different type of clothing that wouldn't hurt.
Not bad.
So we've got a couple minutes left. Is there anything you would like to tell people that they should know about this time? It's spring.
Mm-hmm. It's spring. I guess get out there and get busy. I mean, it's time to get your gardens out, clean your yards up, and get them looking nice. Farmers are out there trying to get fields planted if the weather would cooperate with them.
Yeah, it'd be cooperative. You're right.
Yeah, it's been raining like 4 or 5 days out of the week right now.
And if not that, it's frosted.
Seems like that frosted caused some problems for some of our homeowners and some of our farmers. You know, those early crops they got out there.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, our average last frost date around here is May 10th. As you all know, after that, we received a frost.
Yeah.
And some gardens and stuff got burnt. So, check
those
plants.
I don't really count on it until after Memorial Day.
Yeah.
That's when I feel safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Check those plants. You know, if they've got too much damage, it might be time to replace them or reseed. Or give them a chance to come back if you can see if they're still fairly healthy with just slight burn on top. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's about it, Jeff, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and be glad to have you back again. We'll update the people again with some more topics and go from there. If you got anything else, last words from you, Mike, at all? Speak up.
I'm not ready for my last words yet.
Not last words yet. Okay. There you go. Yeah, that's true. We're not either. So.
Well,
thanks for having me.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for watching AgriTalk, and we'll see you next month here at 1 o'clock on Wednesday.